Joe Lauria has actually experienced pretty much everything in the mainstream media, in the American mainstream media, and has also worked there, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Bloomberg, Independent. He was also active at the UN for decades, based there, and followed the events very closely. And I am very pleased that today he is with us among us, and he has taken on the topic of competition forces cooperation. Can we survive without mutual help? Very warm welcome,
danke.
Joe.
Danke. This morning we spoke in a round table about independent journalism, and I mentioned how mainstream media leaves out historical context. If you don't know the historical context of what happened in the establishment of Israel in 1948, you think the Palestinians are just crazy and are killing those people because they don't like Jews. There's no other reason. And if you take the historical context out of what's happening in Ukraine, you think Putin put his finger on the globe and said, I'm going to invade this country. Of course, there's a context, there's a reason why things happen. So today, I'm going to talk about the context for all of human history in 19 minutes. Since I've already used one. Now, the title was, as she said, Cooperation versus Competition. Can we survive without mutual aid? But I come up with a better title than that now. And too late for it to be printed. And that's Mutual Aid or Mutual Assured Destruction. Mm-hmm. In our youth, we have certain books that stand out. That it seemed like it changed our lives when we read it. And of course, our lives weren't very long at that time. We were in our late teens, early 20s. But there are certain powerful books that maybe influence us for the rest of our lives. I thought of one of those books when I read the description of this conference in Zeit Fragen. And that is these words: the world has changed radically in recent years and changes radically still. The forces that persist in striving for global supremacy are opposed by others working for peace and a world order based on equality and equal rights. The quest for supremacy comes at a high price. Reason and humanity fall by the wayside, so endangering all of us, those who insist on preserving their power as well as others. This seems to be something those who lead the West, heirs to long traditions of imperial superiority, have not yet understood. They have forgotten the treasures of the humanistic tradition, the idea of bonum commune, a good life for all. We in the West are missing an ethic of common identity, common purpose, and an ethic of togetherness. And that those words, when I read it in Zeit Fragen, reminded me of this book, Mutual Aid, A Factor of Evolution, by the Russian prince Peter Kropotkin. This was the book that had such a great influence on me. And there are some people, you know, there's one would-be genius I knew who told me that she read Montesquieu when she was 8. So I said, I must be a late bloomer because I only started reading serious books when I was about 17. So bear with me. I'm still learning. Kropotkin's book was extraordinarily influential. I actually have the copy in my bag that I read 40-something years ago. I still have it. Who was Peter Kropotkin? He was born into an aristocratic family in 1842 in Moscow, became a page to Tsar Nicholas I. As a military officer in Siberia, he took part in geological expeditions for which he won a gold medal from the Russian Geographical Society. He won the medal because he discovered that the land between the Ural Mountains and the Pacific Ocean is actually a plateau, not a plain. And a Siberian mountain range was named after him, the Kropotkin Mountains. Now, he was also a correspondent for St. Petersburg newspaper in Siberia, and he studied peasant social organization. He was interested in politics as well. He was inspired by the 1871 Paris Commune. And in 1872, he traveled here to Switzerland, where he became involved with the Jura Federation, led by the Russian anarchist Mikhail Bakunin, who he never actually got to meet here, but he became influenced by him. So radicalized in Switzerland, Kropotkin returned to Russia with contraband literature, maybe Zeit Fragen, no, I don't think it exists, and joined an anarchist circle. Oh, the translation's a little bit delayed. That's good, okay. It wasn't that it was a bad joke, you hadn't gone through the translation yet. His first political writings in 1873 argued for a stateless society of workers and peasants owning the factories and the land. But the secret police came after his group for advocating, the Tsarist secret police, for advocating these ideas, and Kropotkin was arrested for agitation in 1874 and imprisoned in the Peter and Paul Fortress in St. Petersburg, which was a scandal for a member of the Russian elite to wind up in this prison. In jail, he was allowed, however, to complete a report he was writing about the Ice Age. So he was already a great scientist, and he was in jail because he belonged to this anarchist group. Because of ill health, he was moved to a lower security prison from which he escaped and returned here to Switzerland in 1876. Here he began a publication called La Revolte. 5 years later, in 1881, he was expelled from Switzerland at Russia's request, because after the assassination of Alexander II, the Russians thought he had something to do with it, but there was absolutely no proof. He went between France and London for the next several years. In London, he began a newspaper called Freedom. Inspired by Reading Mutual Aid, in 1983, I went to the offices of Freedom in Whitechapel in London, and I persuaded the editors there to publish one of my articles. That publication, I just found out in preparing the speech, still exists online, nowhere near as good as what it was back then. But he began that newspaper and called Freedom in English. Now, after the Bolshevik Revolution, this is interesting, Kropotkin returned to Russia in 1917, having been exiled all these years. Despite being opposed to Marxism as an anarchist, he was treated as a friend of the revolution. He refused even an offer to become part of the cabinet in the Petrograd Provisional Government. His application for residency in Moscow was personally approved by Vladimir Lenin, with whom he met and corresponded. He argued with Lenin. He said that you should not centralize authority too much, or things go pretty badly here in the Soviet Union. Maybe he knew something. After he died of pneumonia in February 1921, his family refused a state funeral. They offered this anarchist a state funeral. This is the new Bolshevik government. But they allowed the anarchist movement in Russia, which still existed, this was now 4 years after the revolution, to have a big meeting, a funeral in Moscow, where they sent him off. But right after that, this anarchist movement and all their publication, everything, was suppressed. End of the anarchist movement once Kropotkin died. In 1935, however, they named a Moscow metro station after Kropotkin. Good graces. So what are his ideas? What are his arguments? Why am I standing here today talking to you about Peter Kropotkin when I could be doing something else? I think it's important to talk about Kropotkin. Because his ideas, and I want to tell you what his ideas were. His ideas rose mostly from his study of animal life and peasant society during his time in Siberia. It was on the basis of these observations of animal and human cooperation that he concluded that mutual aid within species, helping one another, and not mutual struggle, fighting one another, is the primary factor in human evolution and survival. We're here, he claims, because we cooperated with one another. Animals survive, and humans survived. He concluded mutual aid, not struggle, is the primary factor in human evolution and survival. This was an argument in direct contradiction to the evolving consensus at that time put forward by Herbert Spencer and Thomas Huxley for a war of survival of the fittest. Kropotkin's argument is essentially this: human individuals and societies are both competitive and cooperative. The question is, which has been more important in the survival of the species? His book, Mutual Aid, was a response to Thomas Huxley's 1888 book called The Struggle for Existence and Its Bearing Upon Man, which promoted the idea of social Darwinism, that is, a competitive struggle against others for survival. This came to be known as social Darwinism. Though it was called social Darwinism, it was a misinterpretation of Darwin's work. Kropotkin argued that in his book, that in his vast overview of history, that it has been predominantly the cooperative side of our natures, not the competitive, that has led to our survival, at least until today. Mutual aid should be considered, he wrote, not only as an argument in favor of a pre-human origin of moral instincts, pre-human, but also as a law of nature and a factor of evolution. He also rejected the idea that it was love or parental feeling that led to mutual aid. It is not love of my neighbor, whom I often do not know, which induces me to seize a pail of water and rush towards his house. When I see it on fire, it is a far wider, even though more vague, feeling or instinct of human solidarity and sociability which moves me. So it is with animals. It is not love and even sympathy which induces a herd of horses to form a ring in order to resist an attack of wolves. Not love which induces wolves to form a pack for hunting. And it is neither love nor personal sympathy which induces many thousand of fallow deer to scatter over a territory as large as France to run to the same point. It is a feeling infinitely wider than love or personal sympathy, an instinct that has been slowly developed among animals and men in the course of an extremely long evolution, and which has taught animals and men alike the force they can borrow from the practice of mutual aid and support and the joys they can find in social life. His book, Mutual Aid, that I'm talking about, was published in 1902 as a collection of articles he'd written in a publication called 19th Century. It was written in response to Huxley's book about social Darwinism, which emerged, we should understand, during the Gilded Age, what we called it in the U.S., which was an unrivaled heyday of unregulated capitalism, until today's resurgent Gilded Age of our own neoliberal era. In the introduction to Mutual Aid, Kropotkin writes, there are a number of evolutionists who may not refuse to admit the importance of mutual aid among animals, but they deny that it is with men. And that was Herbert Spencer. He says it's necessary to indicate the overwhelming importance which sociable habits play in nature and in the progressive evolution of both the animal species and human beings to prove that they secure to animals a better protection from their enemies and facilities getting food, for example, and fosters longevity, working together. So he first talks about mutual aid among animals. He critiques in this chapter, the first chapter, the distortion of Darwin's ideas, arguing that Darwin himself acknowledged cooperation in species. And he quotes Darwin actually saying that it's not that it's the cooperation of species that helps them to survive, not just their struggle. And that Darwin said, he pointed out, in numerous animal societies, the struggle between separate individuals for the means of existence disappears. How struggle is replaced by cooperation. That is Kropotkin quoting Darwin. He describes how ants share food and work, including building bridges with their bodies to overcome obstacles. Bees work collectively to create and maintain hives. Migratory birds, such as cranes and swallows, cooperate in long-distance flights by taking turns to lead the flock, to reduce wind resistance, and so on and so forth. Same goes for deer, buffalo, wild horses. They group together to ward off predators. Wolves hunt in packs. They care for the sick together. Social bonds take precedence over individual survival. Even lobsters and crabs practice collective defense. Mm-hmm. Now, he points out, of course, Kropotkin, that in harsh conditions like Siberia, this mutual aid is more necessary for survival than in more secure surroundings such as we live here in Europe or in the United States, which would foster more individualism. The group doesn't depend on us so much to survive, so we can kind of think about our own interests, and sometimes that goes against the group. But it's a dangerous thing, obviously. Kropotkin showed that primates also shared food and groomed themselves and defense, etc. We have the idea now about the animals. He now moves on to human beings, which he calls savages. We call them prehistoric people now. He studied the Australian Aborigines, a people of San, people of South Africa, and he showed in hunter-gatherer societies, the land is held in common. The work is done in common. Thank you, Patrick. And the food is shared. This cooperative behavior becomes institutionalized. This cooperative behavior of hunter-gatherers, hunting together, sharing the food together, owning the land together. This is our origin as people. They form clans and tribes to institutionalize this mutual aid or cooperation. Thank you, Ava. Even their disputes in this stage of our evolution were resolved to a communal consensual process. When the hunter-gatherers started to settle and agriculture began is when things started going bad. In terms of mutual aid, we began to have chieftains, warriors. Settled land changed things. However, he argues that even in the villages of this era, land, tools, and the harvests were still shared. This instinct of mutual support continued despite the emergence of an elite that didn't exist before settled agriculture. And the laws were developed to enforce mutual obligations such as support during famine and where they were enforced through communal consensus, not centralized authority. He quotes Tacitus, Kropotkin does, that who described barbarian societies to show that they, even as they became more complex, these economies, the lack of central authority allowed mutual aid to flourish through cooperative institutions. But this is where the battle line started to draw between an elite that separated itself from the people and their interests became predominant. And this is obviously where we live today and most of human history. But there have been survival of the mutual aid throughout all these stages of history. And he makes a big deal about medieval cities, the free cities like Ghent and Florence, which were outside of the feudal system. And they had mutual aid institutionalized in the guilds, for example, financial aid, training, protection of the members, and communes. So it survived within those cities in the Middle Ages. Charitable institutions, hospitals, almshouses, community gardens, granaries, and in defense and infrastructure, building castles, canals, and walls. These cities resisted monarchs and feudal lords to preserve mutual aid in their guilds, even when overseas colonies and the rise of mercantilism undermined the autonomy of the free city states and the rise of the capitalist class. So at the end of his book, Kropotkin talks what's happened to mutual aid under capitalism, the system that began around in the 1500s, 1600s in the Netherlands, in Florence, and led to the West dominating the whole globe with their empires. And that we're kind of at the end of, but it doesn't seem to want to die, does it? We still live in a capitalist system. We had many predictions from Karl Marx and others, and like Kropotkin, that this would die out, that capitalism would eventually end, that each era does die, but we are still living in that time. He ends his book by arguing that humans have a natural propensity to cooperate, and that that has preserved the species from the central authorities. The resistance to capitalism, he says, comes in the form of trade unions, cooperatives, the fight against enclosures, strikes, and the development of socialist, communist, and anarchist organizations and parties. Peasant rebellions and utopian movements were efforts to maintain social bonds. Now, as an anarchist, Kropotkin believed only decentralized communities could preserve mutual aid, not the state. So the battle lines, I'm taking the history now after he died into the 20th century, looking at it from his perspective. The battle lines between the elites and the public erupted in supreme conflict twice in the 20th century. The First World War was a war within capitalism itself, each against the other for dominance over the system, a battle of survival of the fittest in the capitalist bloc and their overseas colonies. The remnants of the feudal system that tried to suppress the mutual aid of the medieval cities collapsed in the First World War with the fall of the Hohenzollern, the Habsburg, and the Romanovs, all the three eagles, the end of those feudal monarchical systems. After the war, Germany and Turkey were weakened, Britain maintained its empire, and a new player emerged in the scene, the United States. The accumulated greed for wealth and power in the culmination of the Gilded Age of capitalism led to the war that was supposed to end all wars. It was the most destructive conflict to that point in history. Competition had not proven to be the engine of progress that the social Darwinists said, but it proved to be an engine of utter destruction. Kropotkin surprised and disappointed many of his followers by supporting the Allied side rather than opposing the war. This is the First World War, arguing that German aggression needed to be defeated. The unbelievable carnage in the fields of Europe led to a collective reassessment after the war was over. The social Darwinist ethic had contributed to the unimaginable horrors. There was then an implicit acknowledgement, it seems, that a return to mutual aid was needed to put humanity back on course to survival. So we saw out of this the League of Nations, as ill-fated as it turned out to be. In Italy, and this is after the war, the world said, what did we allow ourselves to become? We've got to get back to cooperating with one another. We can't allow this thing to happen again. So we create the League of Nations as an attempt to create institutionalized cooperation. In Italy in 1920, an extraordinary thing happened. Workers took over their factories. They didn't just sit in those factories. They operated the factories. And rail workers went on strike with them and delivered raw materials and took out manufactured materials. In other words, this is syndical anarchism, which proved you don't need the bosses. You can run a factory and you can sell the products as a cooperative, as a workers-owned thing. This was an extraordinary thing that happened in Italy. In 1920, and the capitalists freaked out so much that they started up a little movement to crush it called fascism. That was an amazing event in 1920, what happened. And even in the U.S., in this period after the war, in an attempt to come back to mutual aid, there was a book that was published that claimed the U.S. banks had made profits during the war, and a U.S. senator had hearings. And that led to several acts being published in Congress that amounted to the Neutrality Act. The U.S. could not sell weapons to any country that is at war. That was 1934, 35, or 36. Well, by 1939, the war had begun again. And the U.S., of course, entered that war, as we know. And what happened after that, the most destructive war in history? Another reassessment. We have to come back. We create the United Nations, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. In the United Kingdom, they start the National Health Service, which was the first government-run medical service since Bismarck. And that led to social democracy across most of Western Europe, based on a state-run mutual aid, which Kropotkin would not have agreed with, but that's where I differ with him, I think. I think that the social democracy that we saw in Western Europe, that never fully developed in the United States except for Social Security, which is a government pension, and a medical system, a health government system. You have to get to 65 in order to get. One of my great achievements in life is reaching 65. So I have this government-run health insurance now. I've lived in Australia, and you get it when you're born, Medicare. Well, that's not the U.S. way. Well, these systems were put in, I believe, as a reaction again, a way to try to create a mutual aid. Government insurance is people pooling their money together to help the group. Nothing better an example than a national health system as being mutual aid in our time. But again, we saw from 1980, Ronald Reagan, Margaret Thatcher, beginning the neoliberal movement, which is just a reinvention of laissez-faire capitalism, which was, by the way, the time of Kropotkin's life, where government does not get involved at all in the economy. And everyone is free to make as much money as you want, no matter what the consequences are to the group. And this is the system we're still living under since the 1980, 45 years. This neoliberal system, what is it doing? It's privatizing the National Health Service bit by bit in Britain and in other parts, other national systems of cooperation for health and other matters. It's deregulating businesses. It is going for free trade, which destroys jobs. Unions, the trade union movement is dead in the United States. Yeah. There's about 6% of the workers are in the unions, where it was somewhere over 50% in the 1950s, after the war. We have come back again to this greed, to this competitive time. And the only difference between this time and after the First World War and the Second World War is that if we come to a war again like those first two and use the weapons that we have, there will be no chance again to reassess and try to create mutual aid to save this damned human race. Thank you.